Morning. I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic. And wow, it's good to be here this morning. You know, like many of us a long time ago, I didn't imagine I'd be at a men's spiritual retreat down on the Hood Canal. And so this is special. And this weekend has been really special. I've met a lot of new people. I've learned a lot. I've got to ask a lot of questions. And I don't really feel qualified to be up here. I very much feel like the student in this program, and I'm learning from all you old timers and soaking it in. And you know, I don't know what I have to share. So in preparing, I just started, you know, asking myself some questions. You know, what is spirituality to me? Recovery. What has my journey been? What have I learned? And you know, I got a lot of support along the way. I texted one of my sponsors. I've got a few sponsors, and I said, you know, any advice? And he said, yeah, wear a diaper. Another sponsor, actually earlier this morning, came up to me and you know wanted to make sure I was ready and. He said, make sure you don't make me look bad. So that was good. That was good. I've had guys in my home group for the last 5 months, you know, ask me almost every single day, are you getting nervous yet? And I wasn't. I was doing pretty good, you know, another exercise in letting go. But all these guys would remind me, like, hey, you got this thing coming up. Another member of my home group gave some financial advice for this weekend, and when promoting this weekend, he said, you know, if you want to save your money, make sure you leave before 10:15 a.m. on Sunday morning when Alex speaks. So that was good as well. But you know, I love that about this program. I love that we all get to crack jokes and you know laugh about some really heavy, serious stuff that we all feel and experience, you know. Humor has been a really important part of this program for me. And, you know, like many of us, I take myself very seriously, you know, and can get caught in that space of just being so heady and, you know, self-absorbed. And when I've got someone telling me to not take myself so seriously and to just, you know, take a deep breath and chill out a little bit and laugh, enjoy this life and where we're at, you know, it feels really good. So I was thinking about doing this at the end, but I want to do it now. I'm the last speaker of the weekend. And, you know, like I said before, I got a lot out of this weekend, and I'm with a lot of great men. And I want to cheer. I want all of us to cheer, and I want us all to get really loud. And we can do that here. You know, we're out in the woods. We're in this space. So if you guys will stand up.
If you say lean to the left, lean to the right.
And don't half-ass this. I mean, go in, go deep. Like, we're all lucky. We have our lives, we have our sobriety, we have each other, we have this community. It was a fabulous weekend. Let's just start with a round of applause. Let's get loud! Woo! Yeah! Woo! Thank you. Woo, 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 woo! Thank you. Thanks for having me here. Have a good one. Mark was talking about that on Friday. He was saying something about things. If they're feeling weird, it's pretty good. Like there's some stuff that's felt weird this weekend, and you know, cheering sometimes, right? Like letting it out there it can feel a little weird. But so you know, this spiritual business. I grew up in the church. Grew up in a small town and in Minnesota, and grew up in a Lutheran church. And church was great for getting away from home and smoking weed for my first time. Looking at porn for my first time. Causing trouble in Sunday school, right? Like, it wasn't really about God. And it was about friends, it was about the social side of things. But, you know, it did open me up a little bit to spirituality. And, you know, I remember when I was getting towards my second step with my sponsor, I had to write about the first spiritual experience I could remember. And I had some of those when I was a kid, you know, and it was just a feeling. Some retreat I was on with my family. I was a young kid, and, you know, I was in this space with a bunch of other youngsters, and we were like praying, and I remember feeling this kind of like aura with this group of people. And so when I started learning about spirituality in AA, I had a few things to fall back upon. And you know, I also started thinking about, like, God, like, even though I didn't necessarily have like an identified God or like a religion or a form of spirituality that I was into, like, I played baseball, and I remember stepping up to the plate and praying, you know? I didn't identify as, like, a Christian, but, like, I'd step up to the plate, say, God, you know, please let me hit this ball out of the park, right? And I'd do that in other parts of my life where I was scared or nervous. Like, it was just sort of a default thing, and whether it was from my upbringing in the church or, I don't know, something else, just being a spiritual creature, it was there, and it was a part of me. And when I started to really fall off the rails with my drinking, I was given the gift of desperation, hands down. I think that's what it got to, and that's what got me sober. And, you know, I started drinking at a pretty early age, felt good. It made me get rid of that hole that was inside of me. It made me let go of all those insecurities I felt, made me feel whole. And when I got to the point of my rock bottom, which lasted for a while, I couldn't feel whole anymore from drinking. It was causing a lot more damage than making me feel good and restored, and, you know, all those things that it gave me. And I remember, you know, towards the end of things, I'd wake up, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, the booze would wear off, and I'd wake up, and I didn't have any other alcohol, and I had to go to work the next day, or I had something to do the next day. And just like stepping up to the plate when I was a kid and praying then, you know, I found myself praying and just saying, like, dear God, I don't know who you, it's going to be really hard to not swear in this talk. I was given instructions to try to have a clean mouth, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I found myself praying. I was so desperate that I was like, God, just save me. I don't care what I have to do, but, like, I can't go on like this. I was shaking. I felt nauseous, cold sweats, you know, all that good stuff that comes along with withdrawal. And I was desperate. I was willing to do anything. And I'll talk a little bit more about it in a bit, but, you know, that was just enough willingness, I think, to, like, open the door to this world of recovery that's been so important in my life and so wonderful. You know, going back, when I was a really, really young kid, there's some stuff that happened. And I buried some secrets, you know, from first grade on until I was, I think, 24. And so my upbringing, you know, this good Christian home, my dad drove me to school every day, coach of my sports teams, you know, pillar of the community, successful businessman. My mom was the caretaker. I had 4 siblings. We came across as being this, like, perfect family, you know? Everything was great. But the undercurrents, the lies, the deception, the trauma that my family experienced was just, it was never addressed. And so for me, you know, carrying the secret, I didn't know how to be a whole person and how to show up in like my authentic self and to be real and honest with those around me. You know, I protected myself. I thought I had to perform. I mean, I wasn't aware of it, right? I wasn't like consciously performing to other people. It's just, that was my default. That's how I was programmed. And I'm aware of that feeling today. It's, I can describe it. I can feel where it is in my body. And it's still there. You know, this weekend has been great reflecting on it and learning about it. But, you know, growing up, it was just this thing inside of me that I couldn't really come to terms with, that I protected, that I repressed, that I hid. And, you know, I have this vivid memory of being in, I think, high school. And in high school, I was a popular guy. And, you know, I was, like, popular with the ladies, you know. I was friends with the jocks. I was friends with the nerds. I was friends with the artists. I was friends with the hip-hop heads, you know. I had, like, all my different crews, and I was cool with all these people. But I didn't really feel like a whole person. I have this memory of standing, you know, we had these rows of lockers. And I was standing at my locker, and I was looking over at this group of, you know, my friends interacting. And I just felt like such an outsider. I felt so fake and like, who am I? What, you know, like, what am I? Am I an artist? Am I like the skater? Am I, you know, a soccer player? I didn't know. I was able to squash that insecurity and that feeling when I smoked weed and when I drank. And I learned that in about 7th, 8th grade. And then definitely in high school, things picked up. You know, meth was a party drug. Cocaine was on the scene. We started getting mushrooms. Those were great. And, you know, we'd steal our parents' alcohol, right? And, like, the partying just went hard. But, like, the partying gave me something. Like, I felt so free. And I felt so whole and just, like, invincible and confident. And all these really positive, wonderful things that made me just forget about that pit in my stomach and that hole, you know? And that went on for a long time. And, you know, for like many of us, like the drinking just progressed and it got more and more intense and the partying got more and more extreme. And that thing that gave me confidence and power eventually took me down and made me feel a whole lot worse. And that window of feeling, you know, confident and strong and like a whole person got shorter and shorter and shorter until it basically was gone. And I was just trapped in that cycle of drinking made me feel good for about that first beer and then it was over, right? It made me feel good for a second, but it also was destroying my life and it just spiraled out of control. So I think in all of that, you know, I was looking for a spiritual experience. I remember being in my low points and being like, damn, I just got to become like a monk. You know, that's it. I'm going to move to Tibet. You know, I'm going to pack up all my stuff and go somewhere, right? I wanted an escape. Spirituality was appealing. You know, I remember like smoking oneies out of my little dugout and having like a box of wine and just filling up my cup. The ex-wife had already gone to bed, you know, and I'd be listening to like really cool music, drawing pictures. Like I just was craving this energy, this like spiritual kind of thing that was like not me. So I'd go there with like, you know, drugs and alcohol too. So I was searching for it. I was looking for it, and I just was looking in the wrong ways. I wanted escape from my own misery. Before I decided to go to treatment, you know, before that was a solution, I had some fantasies I wanted to pack up my truck and drive down to Mexico and become a surf bum. I was looking at guiding programs in Alaska. I was going to move back to Minnesota, where I'm from. That's not a good option. There's all these things to get outside of myself, to run away, to do the geographic thing, to escape. And I remember a great sense of peace that I felt when I finally, like, surrendered as much as I could at that point to going to treatment. It was like it was a answer to me. It was a solution, and it felt right. It felt more right than all those other fantasies that I was entertaining. And, I went, I got the assessment, and they're like, yeah, man, you need to go to inpatient care for sure. And I was like, yes, like it felt good. It was a solution. And it was one step towards surrendering. That was in June of 2012. In the next 3 months are some of the darkest months of my life, because at that point I had decided to get sober. I'd even taken action to get sober. I got the assessment. I enrolled in an outpatient program. You know, I was like starting to get my stuff together. And but I couldn't stop drinking. You know, I'd get like a week or two, and I found myself living on this boat at the time, which was a total God shot, because it was either that or the Boeing Field apartments in South Seattle. And if any of you know those apartments, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm with my people. Yeah, you know. But this apartment building sits on the edge, south Seattle, right, south of Georgetown. There is a railroad track on one side. The Boeing airstrip is on the other side. I was joking with somebody earlier, but there's, like, you know, tumbleweeds blowing across the parking lot with, you know, trash everywhere. The rooms, hopefully none of you still live there. the room wasn't in the best shape, and, like, to me that was the solution, right? But it was, like, one of my best friends swooped in and was like, Al, you're not moving there. And he's like, I think I can get you onto Arthur. Arthur's this boat. And so I got onto Arthur, and was living on Arthur, started going to meetings at my home group at the Center for Wooden Boats on the waterfront, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 8. Great meeting. You all should come. And, I knew I was trying to get sober, and I couldn't. And that's when, like, the depression really kicked my ass. There was an anchor outside of the boat. And for about 2 months, I would think about tying myself to the anchor and pushing it in Lake Union. And I believe that was the solution. I would think about, on my way to work, I was contemplating stepping on the gas and driving into a retaining wall, taking the hardest turn I could take. Those were options to me. At least this way someone will, you know, help me, right? Or see how much pain I'm in. Or never see me again. Or I'll get a break from what I'm feeling right now, because it's absolute misery. I was crying all the time, driving to work. Middle of the day, I just, you know, I couldn't sit still for more than an hour, get outside, chain smoke cigarettes and walk around. And God, it was just pain and suffering, because I was like, but I want to get sober. What else do I need, you know? And I couldn't get more than a week or two. And there were just so many things I still was hanging on to inside, you know, just like that feeling when I was a kid and keeping secrets inside. I just had all this shit stuff stuffed inside of me, right? And I don't know what broke, what happened. I just know that I was so desperate by the time the program started to come in to my life, and I started to let the light of the program in and listen to people and become willing. And I think that's a big piece of all this, you know? It's like, how willing am I to set my stuff aside, to set my beliefs aside, to set my contempt prior to investigation aside, my judgment, you know, and I just wasn't. And I catch myself now still to this day, like I will walk into a situation and I will judge it. You know, I'll look at a book cover and I will judge it. I will see how someone looks and I will judge him or her and have my mind made up like that about who they are, what they stand for, and how honest they are. And getting sober was about letting go of that, like getting myself, one of our home group members says, you know, getting myself out of the way, get Paul out of the way is what he always says. And for me, it was like getting Alex out of the way. I needed to just get me out of the way and listen to Don and Pat and Don, you know, all these angels who entered my life, all these men who entered my life and could give me some perspective and guidance. Because left to my own devices, I would have died. Or I would have gone to jail. There's that saying, you know, we have three options. It's institutions, death, or recovery. And I truly believe that. And I choose recovery, hands down, today. So this willingness piece, you know, kind of had to be forced on. Like, I had to be desperate enough to get a little bit of willingness. I want to just touch on the second step. Came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Right? And that just was a crack of willingness that I needed to get sober. So a little bit out of the 12 and 12 I want to read. First, Alcoholics Anonymous does not demand that you believe anything. All of its 12 steps are but suggestions. Second, to get sober, to stay sober, you don't have to swallow all of step 2 right now. Looking back, I find that I took it piecemeal myself. Third, all you really need is a truly open mind. All you really need is a truly open mind. Just resign from the debating society and quit bothering yourself with such deep questions as whether it was the hen or the egg that came first. Again, I say all you need is an open mind. There's another part that it says, it wasn't AA that had the closed mind, it was me. The minute I stopped arguing, I could begin to see and feel. Right there, step 2 gently and very gradually began to infiltrate my life. I can't say upon what occasion or upon what day I came to believe in a power greater than myself, but I certainly have that belief now. To acquire it, I had only to stop fighting and practice the rest of AA's program as enthusiastically as I could. And I don't know what I was fighting, you know? I don't know what I was hanging on to. I think it was fear, honestly. I just was scared. I was scared to be honest. I was scared to get real about my life and the things I had done and, you know, the damage I had caused and the things I had feel. And I felt like I had to manage it all. I had to control it all. I had to be in charge, you know, because that's what I thought, right? That's what I believed. And it was letting go of that and being willing to let go of that that my mind started to open up a little bit. Chuck C. writes about in The New Pair of Glasses, letting the light in through the window, you know, and he talks about the blinds being drawn on the window. And I first read that, you know, it was one of those simple analogies where I was like, oh, yeah, okay. It makes sense to me. And, you know, I was yesterday in a meeting in here looking out that window and, you know, I was imagining the blind drawn and, like, you can't see out. The light's not coming in. But if you crack that blind open a little bit, you know, it almost spurs this curiosity into, like, what's out there? And I know for me, I want to, like, you know, open it up a little bit more and then a little bit more. And then before you know it, where I am today is I want to just rip that blind open and look out at the universe, you know? It's so much bigger than me. And when I am in that place of fear, anxiety, you know, all these things that we carry with us, I'm not looking out the window. That blind is shut. So, you know, step 2 leads to step 3. Got a couple notes up here. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as we understand him. Want to read a little bit more out of the book. The more we become willing to depend upon a higher power, the more independent we actually are. Therefore, dependence, as AA practices it is really a means of gaining true independence of the spirit. And it goes on to describe, you know, the blind being shut, the ego getting in the way. But the moment our mental or emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, how persistently we claim the right to decide all by ourselves just what we shall think and just how we shall act. Oh, yes, we'll weigh the pros and cons of every problem. We'll listen politely to those who would advise us, but all the decisions are to be ours alone. Nobody is going to meddle with our personal independence in such matters. Besides, we think, there is no one we can surely trust. We are certain that our intelligence, backed by willpower, can rightly control our inner lives and guarantee us success in the world we live in. This sounds a brave philosophy, wherein each man plays God. Sounds good in the speaking, but it still has to meet the acid test. How well does it actually work? One good look in the mirror ought to be answer enough for any alcoholic. So I was reviewing that, you know, doing a little prep work for this speech, and I was like, oh yeah, New Year's. You know, let me look in the mirror real quick. So my buddy, John, bought this beautiful cabin up by Stevens Pass and is living this cool alternative life up there. And I was at another party, and people were talking about this New Year's party that was happening up at, you know, John's cabin. And I started to feel bad for myself because I didn't get invited. And I'm not really even that good of friends with John. But some of my good friends are good friends with John, you know. And I was thinking, like, damn, like, I didn't get invited. And I don't have any plans yet for New Year's. Poor me. And so I was in this, you know, this reading reminded me of it. Because, like, at this party, I walked up to John. And I knew what he was doing for New Year's. But I said to him, hey, man, what are you doing for New Year's? Because I wanted an invite, you know? So he starts telling me he's going to have this party and I should come. And then I get the invite and I'm like, yeah, all right. You know, I got into that one. This is just a couple months ago, so I still have a lot of work to do. So I get the invite. I'm thinking, like, all these people I know are going to be there because all these people I know were talking about it. And I'm driving up to the cabin with my friend Julia, and you know, we're chatting, and I'm like, so who's gonna be at the party? And she starts telling me who's gonna be at the party, and I don't know any of these people, right? And it turns out that it's like this old crew of college friends. So now I'm the outsider, and now I start to get social anxiety, right? And I'm like, what did I just get myself into? I get up there, oh, and I'm the only sober one. And there are about 25 people packed into this cabin, right? Like, we don't have beds, we don't have privacy. And how did I get there? I got there because of my own willpower, right? Like, I got there because I was trying to control the situation, and I did it in a really sneaky way. And I got the invite, and I got what I was trying to get, but then once I got it, it sucked. For a little bit. You know, I had some time to take some breaths and laugh at myself. I went skiing by myself for a while. And then there was a dance party, and I danced, you know, and that felt really good. So, you know, left to my own devices, I can get myself into some situations where I'm like, what on earth am I doing here? This is causing me more misery. So what have I learned, you know, in this program and with spirituality and recovery? Sandy B. writes about or talks about AA boiling down to one thing and one thing only, and that's letting go. And when I first heard this talk, which is on YouTube, just look up Sandy B., letting go. It's wonderful. He does a really good job articulating what it means to let go and to surrender and to practice acceptance. And I don't know, sometimes that can feel a little vague to me, you know? Like, I think I can intellectualize it. You're like, oh yeah, let go, whatever. But to truly let go of something, like, what what does that mean for me today? And, you know, I think, one, it starts with pausing when agitated or doubtful. One, it starts with cultivating a sense of awareness of what's going on. And we have a million tools in this program to do that. We have prayer, we have meditation, we have sponsors. And if I'm not practicing awareness, I can't let go of what's agitating me, right? So I have to call Donnie, I have to call people in this room, I have to talk about this stuff at meetings and say, you know what, I'm scared right now. I'm fearful. I think, you know, maybe I made a mistake. I don't know what to do. It's that open-mindedness, it's that willingness. I have to put my stuff out there to someone else. And then I'll get some perspective on that. And that really helps. I can't do that if I'm so stubborn and egotistical that I can't admit my own shit and say what I'm struggling with. So try to exercise some awareness around what's going on. If I can get an idea of maybe what's troubling me or what I'm hanging on to, what my claws are grasping onto, then I can take action. And again, we have a million tools to take action in this program, which is a beautiful thing. I can go back to prayer and meditation. I can go back to talking to a sponsor. I can take inventory. You know, I can speak at a meeting. I can write. There's so much we can do. I can go for a run. I can eat a better meal. I can get a good night's sleep. There are so many things. And then I have to pray to my higher power to take this thing. And so what does that mean, right? Like, if I were, I just went through some job stuff, and I'll talk about it in a little bit, but if I decide that I can't control this situation, you know, what is the situation? It's the job I'm going to get, you know, it's when I'm going to get it, what it's going to be exactly, and I recognize those are the things I can't control, and I recognize what I can control, which is my practice. Then I get to say, like, higher power.
Don't let this boost your ego. You're talking about higher power.
You know, now I don't have it, right? Like, it's not up to, I've just liberated myself from this thing that is, like, driving me crazy. And I can forget about it, so I have to practice. I have to, you know, do this stuff to keep this on my consciousness. I'm intentionally letting, you know, this thing go. You can have that. I don't want it back. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to do that today. I just went through a situation with work where, and this is Pat's favorite topic, but I had a grand plan for what was going to happen with my employment. I left a job that was like, you know, I got sober, I went to grad school, became a boss of an organization, it was this cool, like, social justice organization, doing youth development work and service learning, it was fulfilling, you know, and I was there for a little over 2 years and decided I want to make some changes, had some opportunities come my way, and I was like, all right, it's time to exit this work, and I had a plan set up. It was going to go exactly this way in exactly this amount of time. And so I made the leap. I took the risk. I flew the coop. And the first opportunity did not move to full-time. It stayed at part-time. And the second opportunity that was supposed to come next got pushed out about a year. Maybe longer. Maybe it'll never happen. I don't know anymore. But all of a sudden, I was thrust into this world of uncertainty, and I felt threatened. And I was scared, and it took me a while to accept that and to be able to talk about it because my ego was like, no, like, I'm running the show right now with my job. I'm about to be a boss. I'm about to make a lot of money. You know, it's going to go perfectly. And it didn't. One of my sponsors says that our serenity is directly proportional to our expectations. So basically, the more expectations we have, often the less serenity we're going to have, right? So I had a lot of expectations, and they weren't met. And so how do you weather uncertainty and sobriety? How do you weather fear? For me, it all goes back to spirituality. and turning things over, you know, giving my stuff to my higher power. And I reached out, I got help, and it soon occurred to me that what I had control over in this situation was very little. What I had control over was like the nuts and bolts. It was like, eat well, exercise, get a good night's sleep, go to meetings, do some journaling, pray, meditate, you know, breathe. Where is my breath today? What's it doing? And apply for jobs, meet with people, be coachable, right? Like, take the action, but don't try to manage the outcome. And that's one of the big things I'm learning right now is, like, I have no control over the outcome at all. And that's the mystery. And that's the abundance. And that's the beauty. And that's why I want to cheer sometimes, because, like, you open that window shade and you see an enormous world out there. It's much bigger than me. So I started doing that, you know, and I got really close on a few jobs and they didn't work, and so I'd get discouraged, but then I'd be like, all right, trust my higher power, like trust. Mark mentioned faith is a result of results. I didn't make that up. I heard it from Jim. Jim heard it from George, and, you know, it was passed down, and it's this thing I kind of get now. Sobriety has given me results, and it's, you know, the results have given me faith. And faith to me means trust. So if I can trust my higher power that I'm exactly where I need to be today, then the right thing will happen. So one thing didn't work out, another thing didn't work out, some time's going on. I'm scared, I'm fearful, but every day, you know, I'm finding myself on my hands and knees just praying, right? So last Wednesday, I made it to the final round in an interview, and supposed to find out if I got the job or not on Thursday. Thursday comes around, having another meeting. You know, I'm sitting over in Bellevue, and I just felt so worked up. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm going to find out any minute. It's going to come, and I was agitated. And in that moment, you know, I took out my computer and just started writing, you know, and I wrote a letter to my higher power, and I was just like, Dear HP, take this shit. Like, I'm going crazy, you know? Like, take it, all of it, the relationships, my family, the money, the job, this damn talk today. You know, like, it's yours. I will show up. You know, I will do that, what I can do. But the rest of it is, it's up to you. And it is hard, but, like, I am trusting that right now. And got that out, had my meeting, and, you know, then I got a phone call, and I got a job. And it's a job in a totally different sector, studying a field that, like, I don't really have any exposure to, but there are some amazing perks to it, and I'm grateful. And I'm like, my God, only through exercising a spiritual program could this have happened in this way. And then, of course, this retreat is this weekend where I get to talk to men about their life experiences and their relationships and their employment success and challenges and learnings, right? And I get to be coachable, and I get to listen. And for that, I'm so grateful. So, in closing, this has been a great weekend, and I am filled with so much gratitude for all of you. My dad is in jail right now, that same dad I talked about earlier. Drove me to school every day, idyllic father. His alcoholism really took him down, and ultimately my family blew apart several years ago. And it's been a shit show ever since, you know. But as I've worked the program more and more, I've developed a healthier relationship with it. And, you know, I basically lost the dad that I knew growing up as a kid, the guy I would call or talk to for advice. I never was very close with his dad, my grandpa. And so this program has been about building relationships with men. And it took me, you know, 2-3 years to realize that. And today I have several fathers, I have several grandfathers, I now have brothers. And I have a family and I have strength that I never had before. And I feel like I have just been given the greatest gift, you know, to be here today. It was a weird retreat, you know, like with a bunch of dudes in the woods on Hood Canal, talking about our feelings, you know, making jokes, right? But it is such a beautiful thing. And I know, like, I struggle with uncertainty and what I believe in and, you know, what my convictions are. But, like, I know with recovery, with AA, like, this is the right thing for me. Right here, right now, being with all of you is the best thing I can be doing with my life. And I'm grateful for that. Thanks.